Hi guys, I have just come back from my last trip of the year, so I'm kind of happy. It was a really hard one. It was like an hour and a little bit on an aeroplane. But I did come home last night from Sydney, my 41st flight of the year, and very last flight of the year, so I'm very happy to have all of that done, and now I get to sit at home and relax for about the next 4 weeks before things ramp up again. Now, I was down in Sydney. I was doing, in fact, I did a talk for Microsoft on, when was this? Wednesday night. I did a little bit of promotional stuff with them for Ignite. We've got Ignite that's going to happen in Australia on the Gold Coast in about the middle of Feb, which is a good event. And whilst I was there, I also did a workshop on Thursday, yesterday. And of course, as these things tend to happen, Thursday, yesterday, was the day that this big Yahoo news broke. Yes, the other big Yahoo news on top of the big Yahoo news that we had in September. So if you recall, back in September, Yahoo came out and said, hackers have got our things, nation-state hackers have got our things, 500 million of our things, and it was a massive story. And everyone was like, wow, 500 million, that's half a billion, you know, this is crazy. And of course, yesterday they came out and said, well, another thing happened, and the other thing looks like it's impacted 1 billion of our things. So that's obviously a rather large number. And there are a number of really interesting things about that. And it was kind of unfortunate, the timing. I mean, it's probably never a good time to have 1 billion of your things stolen. But the timing for me, because I was doing this workshop and I'm getting press calls, and often I do sort of Skype videos and radio interviews, and it's very hard to do those ducking in and out of a workshop. But anyhow, somehow I managed to do some of them, and I thought I'd sort of cover off a few things here that kept getting asked and some of the things that I thought were particularly interesting about the incident. And I'm just looking at some of the comments that were made, and of course, one of the things that's particularly interesting about this Yahoo incident is that it is allegedly a separate incident. They've said here that it doesn't appear to be related to the first one. They've also said we have not been able to identify the intrusion associated with this theft. And I'll come back to that because they do then say other things that are kind of interesting. But a separate incident, and this is the thing, like it's one thing to have 500 million or a billion of your records stolen. It's quite another when you start to see a pattern. And this is one of the things I was talking to press about yesterday, where they're saying, you know, what does this mean for Yahoo? And any one of these incidents as a one-off does become enormously costly. So, for example, TalkTalk said in a piece I read just a couple of days ago that their incident there, where they had their data stolen last year, cost them £42 million as a single incident. Now, obviously, when this happens again, it's not going to be good, but the bigger thing in terms of confidence in the company is you start to see this trend of failures. And particularly for Yahoo, who's still going through this Verizon acquisition deal as well, when you begin to show that over time multiple incidents have happened that are separate, you start to sort of go, what is exactly going on over at Yahoo? Now, some of the comments were quite interesting here as well. So Bob Lord, the CISO over there, and you've got to feel a bit sorry for Bob because Bob's only been there a year. And these incidents happened in 2013. So Bob is effectively cleaning up dramas that happened under someone else's watch. So I do feel sympathetic for poor Bob in this situation. Anyway, so Bob's come out with some comments here. They're kind of interesting because one of them says, an unauthorized third party accessed our proprietary code to learn how to forge cookies. Now, I think there's a couple of things that are interesting here. So, number one is this is after saying we have not been able to identify the intrusion associated with this theft. Now, maybe what he's saying is they're not sure of the intrusion that gained access to the source code, because it then does sound like they know how people got a certain amount of data out, and it's by forging cookies. Now, let's talk about the forging of the cookies, because the way I read this and the way other people seem to have read it as well is that someone has figured out how to create cookies which are effectively authentication tokens. So you log onto a website, you get a token back, normally via a cookie, and then every subsequent request you make, you send the cookie, and the website says, okay, I know who you are because you've got this cookie. Now, these cookies are first of all sensitive data, because if someone else gets them, they can impersonate you, they just reissue the same cookie. But second of all, they're not really meant to be deterministic in this way, because what this seems to read as is that if you know the algorithm which is used to create the cookie, and maybe there was another secret as well, which was also stolen from the database or from the code base. But regardless, someone has had enough information to be able to predetermine what the cookies for various identities should be. And that's quite an odd kind of architectural decision, particularly because these cookies are often cryptographically signed as well. So to have cookies where someone has been able to look at the code and say, I can figure out a valid token for someone and then issue that request, that's quite unusual. On the other hand, well, it doesn't change the fact that it's unusual, but on the other hand, we've got to remember this happened several years ago too. And our tolerances and our approaches to security were not as good as what they are now. We have become more conscious of how we do things. I still think it would have been weird to do that in 2013, but be that as it may, we are judging an incident of a bygone era, and yes, it's only 3 years, but a lot happens in 3 years. We are judging that by today's standards. Which brings us to the password hashing. Now, here's the other thing. The passwords were stored as MD5 hashes, no mention of a salt. And frankly, even if there was a salt, it wouldn't do them much good. We saw LinkedIn, which was salted SHA-1, 90% of those cracked within about several days. So, you know, probably wouldn't do you a lot of good anyway. But MD5 is almost as good as useless. And even in 2013, we knew that that was exceptionally bad. We knew it was a big problem. So, you know, shame on Yahoo for having that sort of approach. Again, not Bob's fault. Bob inherited this. Shame on Yahoo for doing that at that time when it clearly was not cool. I wonder how much of it was because Yahoo was on a bit of a downward spiral then as well. And perhaps investing in security wasn't such a big priority for them. Now, certainly that was a lot of the speculation that came out, especially from insiders, after they announced the September incident. So anyway, a bunch of MD5 hashes there. So that's no good. But the other thing that sort of makes me wonder is if they're effectively saying someone determined authentication cookies, issued authenticated requests under the identity of victims, how do they get the MD5 passwords? Because even if I'm authenticated to Yahoo or to another website, I'm not really going to be able to go and pull my own MD5 hash from their system. So that's not immediately clear, because we normally see things like MD5 passwords or MD5 hashes pulled via exploits such as SQL injection, or it's in a database backup which has been published publicly, or some other exposure of the underlying system. It's not exposed in any user-facing way. So not quite clear on that. Security questions. These security questions. These, again, are, honestly, they're a bit of a remnant of a bygone era. And the problem here is that they have had security questions exposed. They've said some of them were encrypted. Good for those. Some of them were not. I'm guessing they're not going to tell people who had encrypted ones stolen and who didn't. They may not even know. So this is a problem, because once your mother's maiden name is exposed, it is exposed. That is an immutable attribute. You cannot go and change that. You can go and change the dog's name if your password is stolen. Not very good for the dog, by the way. It's very confusing. But that is something which you have a little bit more flexibility over. That is a sort of a current state representation. But these immutable pieces of data that are sort of historically set in stone, if you like, you know, they're terrible, terrible things as password questions or as security questions, because they get exposed and they can't be changed. So final thing on Yahoo. Their share price has fallen about 6%, which frankly in some ways kind of gets off a little bit lightly given the scale of this incident and the fact that it's a second incident within only several months of huge scale. So, you know, look, 6% is still a lot when they're still worth many, many billions of dollars, but not as bad as it possibly could have been. But I think the real impact will be in that Verizon acquisition. So we'll see what's actually left of that deal and how much it's devalued by. Now, I saw figures after the September event which said they've knocked about $1 billion off the deal, which was a fairly large chunk of the total overall price that Verizon was going to pay. So anyway, that's Yahoo. We'll see how that all wraps up. Actually, last thing. Have I Been Pwned has been getting hammered since this news went out. Not because I have the data. And if I did have the data, well, imagine what that would do to the traffic. But it's been getting hammered because, of course, all these news stories come out and they go, look, as part of sort of protecting your online identity, go and search, have I been pwned, subscribe, just see if anything pops up in the future. So I've had, it's approaching 5 million requests in the last 24 hours, which is fine. You know, they're sort of distributed out. There's no any one sort of big spikes of traffic. So it's been a little bit of a no-brainer in terms of the volume on the site. If the data did come out and I had to load 1 billion records, I've sort of seen people go, you know, you're going to need a bigger cloud or you're going to have to pay a lot of money for it. It honestly, it'd be a bit of a no-brainer. It'd be a long load time. It would probably take me more than a day to load the data once I'd processed it and put it up there. But there's nearly 2 billion records there already. So yes, 1 billion is a lot, but proportionally, it's not sort of a multiple orders of magnitude larger. It's just a bit more data than what's already there. And my cost would probably go up somewhere in the order of $10 a month. That's what it's costing me for the table storage that sits under Azure, or that's about the proportion of increase that I expect I'd see. So it's a little bit of a no-brainer in terms of have I been pwned. I don't know if we're going to see the data or not. We've certainly never seen the 500 million from September, so who knows. All right, that's Yahoo. Now, other things I've done and wrote about this week. I wrote about careers in information security. And a lot of people have asked me this question. A few trolls out there have responded, not necessarily to this post. In fact, this post has been very positive. But over the years, and particularly over this year, with disparaging things, because that's what trolls do. That's basically their job. You know, they've got to keep busy. And I guess what this shows is that there are lots of different opinions on this topic about how you should have a career in InfoSec. I write about how, for me, it was a very organic change. It was something that happened sort of many, many years after I'd already been doing development and architecture work, and I sort of evolved into it. I've made suggestions for people because a lot of people go, I'd really like to get into InfoSec now because it's such a hot thing. And this was before the Yahoo incident too, or the second Yahoo incident. And, you know, I guess that there's multiple different areas of security that people might want to go into. Do you want to go into penetration testing? Do you want to go into building defensive tools? Do you want to just be a better developer and more security aware? Like, there's lots of angles. And what I've done is suggested, look, if you want to go and do this, one of the best pieces of advice I can give with my clearly stated vested interest is the Pluralsight content that Dale Meredith and myself wrote in order to help people get their CEH, their Certified Ethical Hacker Cert. I reckon that's one of the best things you can do because, first of all, it's really cheap to access. Pluralsight is $29 a month, so it's an absolute no-brainer cost-wise. There's about 74, 75 hours worth of content across the entire set of modules or courses that go into what you need to get your CEH. You can sit there, you can watch all that at your own pace. We go into a lot more detail than what a lot of the other material does. There's really good info on there on things like SQL injection and session hijacking relevant to Yahoo. You can go through all that and then you can go and sit your CEH exam. Now, there's some other prerequisites as well. You need to be in a position to actually have experience exercising this knowledge. So if you're working in a company and you're already in, say, a dev role or an IT ops role, you may well have exposure to that. Could tick that box. But I've suggested, look, that's a really good way of getting going because a cert gives you something, right? So it's something that you can go to a potential employer with and go, I have shown the dedication, I've sat there, I've done this material, I've gotten recognition for having done it, and CEH is pretty broadly recognized as well. Everything from lots of private enterprises through to the Department of Defense in the US. They all sort of recognize this cert, and many organizations hold it in high regard. It's not all roses. I've written about things which I don't like about it and how we've tackled that. It's an honest, candid review, so go and check that out if you're interested in going down that path. And particularly coming up to holiday period, you could knock a big chunk of that material off in next to no time. So that was careers there in security and going down the ethical hacking route. I also released another course. I released a freebie course with Varonis. So Varonis is a security company who I have done three other courses with. I did the a web security fundamentals one last year, I think. I did a ransomware one earlier this year. That one's been really successful because ransomware is a big topic. I also did one on insider threats a few months ago. All of these courses are just over an hour. They're all free as well. And the one that I've just done yesterday is about internet security basics. Now, if you're watching this course, it's probably not for you to consume, but it's going to help you, and I'll tell you why it's going to help you. It is designed for the sorts of people that keep asking you to do their tech support. And you are probably like me in that your family and your friends are always going, can you look at my computer? Can you fix this? How should I do my passwords and all this kind of other, you know, stuff that we've all had to deal with probably for many years. So it's written with the basics in mind, and it's written in five different modules. So there's one on passwords. So what makes a good password, a bad password? Don't reuse your password. Don't trust Yahoo with your... I didn't say that, but you get the idea. A little bit on password managers. Bit of stuff on things like even just using a book. When I did my talk at Microsoft the other day, a couple of nights ago, there was a bloke there who said, I put my passwords in a book and I literally like put it in the drawer. I was like, mate, that is so much better than trying to remember them and reuse them. You know, like, okay, to be good to have a password manager, but your threat actors are now fundamentally different. There's a very, very small number of threat actors who can get into your house, get your book, possibly out of a locked drawer, and start compromising your accounts. Much better than password reuse and all the other dramas that come with it. So anyway, there's a module on passwords. There's a module on website security. Some fundamentals around things like the padlock in the address bar means some things, but it doesn't mean other things. So stuff that you know, but your non-technical others and family probably don't. Software maintenance. Why do you keep getting prompted the entire time to update your software? I got a prompt today for iOS 10.2. Apparently, I need to take a new update. Why does this keep happening? Why should I take the updates? So that's covered. That's the third module, mobile devices. And in the mobile devices section, I talk about things like having a PIN, right? How many people do you see just don't have a PIN on their phone? And I'm going, look, this is your life. This is only my cover, but you know, this is your life locked away in this phone. It's all your photos of your kids. You're signed into your social media. It's got access to your email address, which allows you to reset all your accounts. You can receive SMSs on it, which then does your multi-step verification. It's everything. So put a PIN on. I do a little screen sharing on my device and show the fundamentals of having a PIN, having things like Touch ID on my iOS. Awesome. If you've got family members that have got an iPhone with Touch ID or another device with biometrics, turn that sucker on straight away because it is so easy and it solves so many problems. And finally, I talk about the Internet of Things. And yeah, we've got so many people that are putting things in their home that are connected back out to the internet, especially stuff like webcams. So I talk a lot about how they get exposed, give a few examples. Particularly over the Christmas period, people are going to have webcams in their stockings, plug them into the internet, and 5 minutes later, they're going to be on Shodan with the living room or the kids in bed, you know, flashed up there on the net. So a little bit of stuff there about some fundamentals of what you need to do to protect your IoT things. All of that is free. So it is actually on YouTube, which is even freer than the previous courses I've done for Varonis because you don't have to register. You don't have to give them any information. There's not even any ads. They've had thousands and thousands of views already just in the last, I think, day since it was published, which is good news. Give that to your non-significant, they may be significant, non-technical significant others and other people who need it. So that is good stuff. I'm really happy that it's there and it's free. There's that one. Now, speaking of other stuff that has been popular, I've spoken about Ubiquiti a few times. And I was really surprised this week, my Ubiquiti blog post that I've mentioned before went up to number one on Hacker News. Got a lot of traction, a lot of people talking about spending their hard-earned cash on Ubiquiti. And again, I haven't been incentivized in any way to talk about them, but it is just really cool to see how many people have gone, hey, there's this thing which is a massively important part of my everyday life, which is my network, and it was crap before and now it's good. Lots of people posting their photos of the gear they've bought and how they've configured it all. I'm really happy about it. My brother's just bought a new house. I want to help him set his house up with all this gear. So I'm kind of looking forward to being able to spec out a place and actually mount stuff properly and do that kind of thing. So that's really cool. If you haven't looked at the Ubiquiti stuff, I'll put a link on my blog post again to that. And the last thing, my sponsor this week is Gold Security. So big thanks to those guys for coming on board. It's the first week they've been on there. Pretty good week for them to have been on there too, with the Ubiquiti info going right to the top of the charts and also having all that extra attention from Yahoo. So big thanks to those guys, and I'm still booked out all the way through to April, which is nice. So that is it for this week. Some stuff I never saw coming a week ago, not the Yahoo stuff, so who knows what will be happening next week in the next weekly update. Thanks for watching and listening, folks.